Playing in a band can be a very convoluted endeavor. There are many layers that aren't so readily apparent to novices wanting to try their hand. It's not enough that you're well-schooled on your instrument. What usually sets bands apart is their attention to the detail required of all the other aspects outside of the music, which includes dogged adherence to presentation and performance. Sometimes bands think they can simply rely on the music to attract and hold a crowd. And sometimes they're right. But with the amount of barkers biting for an audience's attention, one needs to set themselves apart. Even Jimi Hendrix, for as genius a musician as he was, still learned how to play the guitar with his teeth. Commitment is what fascinates me with performance. I'm not so much dazzled by an actor's commitment because it's kind of in their job description. It's kind of like being fascinated that a mechanic can fix your car. I'm much more fascinated by the commitment it takes of other players in other fields. Again, this leads me to my total preoccupation with comedians. While it is often seen as boring and arrogant for a musician to just stand there and take themselves too seriously, in comedy, the reverse is true. Never breaking face in comedy can become a giant game of uncle, and the longer and farther a comedian takes it, the more distinguished they become. Great performers like Andy Kaufman and Andrew Dice Clay are first that come to mind. In fact, it's Kaufman whose brilliant comedic bits transcended the genre to become almost pulp trash art in the way he simultaneously goaded, offended, inflamed, aroused, amused, and ultimately beguiled an audience, depending on their IQ level, of course. It was graceful to watch, like a ninja doing ballet. In many ways, he set the standard for modern pop culture performance art, and his acolytes are endless. I count myself as a member. In recent years, there's been the Andy Kaufman Award, set up to reward new comedic performers who express a similar spirit to Kaufman in their originality and delivery. Past winners include Kristen Schaal, Reggie Watts, and Brent Weinbach, who was a guest on our show, episode number 64. Now, when comedian Tim Gilbert stopped by a few months ago on episode number 108, he talked about his comedy night he co-hosts with Marty Topps, who he dubbed the funniest person in the world right now. High praise from someone like Tim, so I had to check Marty out. I did my online searches and found Marty's albums, and Tim was right. Marty Topps might very well be the funniest person in the world right now. Marty's got three albums. One of them is a musical tribute to the clothing brand Tap Out. That's right, Tap Out. And it's called A Loving Tribute to Tap Out. He has another album, which is also a tribute to Tap Out clothing, but it's a Christmas album and it's called A Very Tap Out Christmas. And finally, his most recent album, released earlier this year, is called Live from the Rotary Club, which I think is about his wife. It's easily one of the funniest, creepiest, and dare I say, unearthly albums I've heard in a long while. All are available on Bandcamp. Just do a search on his name. That's Topps with two P's. The songs and the approach contained on Marty's albums line up with my brand of humor almost to the micrometer. Don't let his foray into musical comedy fool you. Marty's a comedian, a real comedian through and through, but expanding his comedic talent to now become somewhat of a song and dance man. Check out his videos for So Alone and Tap Out. I know the songs are funny, but I didn't really laugh the first time I heard them. I was more stunned that there's someone else out there who not only sees the world this way, but goes ahead and produces material that reflects it. Stupefied was more like my initial reaction, kind of like the pause an audience gives before a standing ovation, only my pause lasted for a few minutes. If I can wield any power, I'd nominate Marty Topps to the shortlist for this Andy Kaufman Award. Almost immediately after listening to his albums, I emailed Nick Flanagan and asked him if he could get Marty to do the podcast. Luckily, Marty agreed, I heard he doesn't do podcasts often, so I'm honored he chose to do ours. Kudos to Nick for hooking this up, and to Tim Gilbert for turning me on to Marty. I want to thank Blue Mike Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones for supporting the podcast. I want to thank Chino Locos Restaurants for existing, because when I want a fish burrito, I want it stuffed with chow mein noodles. And thanks to you for your feedback that I read on Twitter and other social media platforms. It's nice to know people are out there listening and liking what they're hearing. Please subscribe on iTunes. It's free. Leave a rating or a review if you can. It helps the podcast's online profile. And now, without further ado, Marty Topps is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's co-host. They love for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes. Damn it, from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down. Do. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's co-host. Download for free on SoundCloud and iTunes. Sometimes Damien from Fucked Up stops by and hangs out too. Marty Topps is here. Very great to have him here. You were mentioned, first time I heard of you was really very recently when we had Tim Gilbert on just a few episodes ago. And Tim mentioned that he has these comedy nights with you.
Those are like the best comedy shows in Toronto right now.
Thank you.
Ours might be the Troll and Marty Topps.
And he said something that got my ears pricked up, which was that he said Marty Topps did a whole album on the clothing line Tap Out.
That's
and,
right.
I really didn't understand what that meant until I actually did a search on you on Bandcamp.
Mm-hmm. It's and a classic enough, album.
It is exactly how Tim said it was. It's an album, a tribute album to the clothing brand Tap Out.
Nothing more. Just that.
You make incredible. Up you make up a couple of stores in it. I feel like Beatdown. Did you
no,
see
that's real place? Real. There's on St. Clair West.
There's a place called Beatdown?
Beatdown Sports. That's where I bought my first Tap Out gear.
Now,
how much Tap Out gear do you own?
I don't know anymore.
Here's the thing, right? Is that obviously vague. Tap Out is
could
associated
be 0 or 100 items.
Yeah. Tap Out is associated with, I don't know, kind of a certain person.
They could be fans of your show.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It's for sure fans of your show.
Or that.
Or
right?
very nice people.
Or very nice people.
Joe Rogan.
But there, obviously, you being a comedian and you doing this, there's a certain amount of poking fun.
Yes.
And have you crossed the line
where the Tap Out cocksock.
Where you've poked fun at Tap Out so much that you now want to wear it for reals?
I do.
And
I wear their hats a lot. I like their hats.
Right.
Why do you like their hats? You like the shape, don't you? They have a certain shape, don't they?
Yeah, they've got that great shape.
Kind of squarish.
Yeah, that's a style that suits me. I've kind of abandoned Tap Out stuff in the last year or so because I've been doing it.
Since the controversy.
Since the controversy.
Actually,
yeah, I was tapped out of Tap Out.
Didn't the owner kill somebody or something?
The owner, one of the owners did die mask, RIP.
Yeah.
But Punk Ass and Scrape are still alive.
Wait, those are their real names? I thought that was
well,
also
Scrape,
a joke.
Scrape is short for Skyscrape.
Oh, okay.
What are you talking about right
the
now?
The owners of Tap Out.
Okay.
The founders of Tap Out are Mask, Punk Ass, and Scrape.
Really?
Yeah. And they're still at it today.
And they're
okay,
all MMA
well,
fighters?
I take back what I said. Those are very scary names.
Yes. And I respect them, and I love them.
And I totally respect them as well.
Yeah. I was doing it for... It was the first musical comedy I ever kind of did. I was teaching myself to write music and play music with that record, so it took a long time to put together. So by the time I stopped doing it like a year ago or so. I've been doing it for like over 2 years, and I just
I think so.
I mean, it's songs.
It's amazing to me to think that you were only doing that you were not doing musical comedy before that, because now that's almost, besides hosting, it's like the musical stuff is your, is what you do on stage.
you made yourself a musician.
Yeah, but what you were doing before that was highly conceptual and very aided by music. You know,
it's true. Yeah,
because Marty used to. That's how we met, I think, was you did a show called Marty Topp's House Party. And it was something where, like, every month you'd be like, I really want to pay you, but I've put so much money into this that there's no way for me to, like, even make money back.
I was losing hundreds upwards of $1,000 a show.
Yeah. So, because they'd be just so, you know, you rent a place. And
we'd build huge sets that we'd throw out. We'd get all these costumes. I'd have choreographed dancers, a DJ, lasers.
And they'd be late shows.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be shows. It wouldn't be an 8 o'clock or even a 9 o'clock show. It'd be a show that would start around 10:30, I think, generally.
That's early.
And that would be on the early end. And the crowds were so rowdy, you know, but good. Yeah, so you would do those, and it seemed like so much work. Like, more work, or as much as the albums, it
no,
seemed.
No, more. It was draining. So,
and yet they were much more, you know, intangible, because they would go away. Although you'd probably film them. That was probably part
we
of the budget.
We filmed them, but I didn't know what to do with it. Sometimes I'll put up, like, a promo and be like, this, like, 2.5-hour show, I just cut it into something that's completely nonsensical.
And that goes back to MySpace. That was when I remember
you hit me up on MySpace.
Yeah, so that's, what, 7 years ago, probably? 8 years ago?
Gotta
maybe
be,
more?
Yeah.
Maybe more.
So now you're doing these records? Is this a are you continuing to do all this stuff? Like, you have 3 records out now.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
2 of them are about Tap Out, the clothing brand. Now, has anyone from Tap Out found you?
No, never. When I first started to write the record, it was just like a joke to my friends. Because when I hung up House Party Show, we were trying to figure out what to do now with comedy. And we were thinking back, like, I would do, like, sketches, characters, videos, music, and the music kind of always hit. So we were just like, what if I focus only on music? So I was just writing these songs that only about Tap Out. And the goal was to write nothing about MMA at all, just do, like, a whole, every song is just that the t-shirt looks good and it feels good.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And that it's a brand.
And that's
almost more than even the clothes. It's really just
a cool brand.
The name,
The word cool is in my album, like, 20 times. but I used to email Tap Out, the marketing team, and it was just a joke to my friends. I would email them jingles, be like, hey, I've been writing these for you guys. I'll give them to you for free, until my email got blocked from them. And no response or anything.
Really?
Yeah. So I've never heard from them. And when I put the Christmas album out, I was like, hey, I'm into album number 2. I really love you guys. I had a new email address, and I sent it to their Facebook too, but no response.
Did they block you on that?
Yeah. But I tweeted at Punkass recently, and he favorited it. So
and
that's a
no
big,
block.
No block. Yeah.
That's like...
So there's a guy... I'm really confused. There's a guy who is an owner of this clothing line called Punkass?
Yeah.
Or Badass.
Punkass. Yeah.
And what's the other guy's name?
Scrape.
And there's...
Short for Skyscrape, yeah.
And did someone die?
Mask. Rest in peace, died. Yeah.
Eye Mask?
No, just Mask.
Wait, did Mask favorite it from the grave?
No, it's Punkass.
And people call them these names for real? Like, even though they're kind of...
I think that now they're more legit. They've branched out into the world of WWE and that kind of thing.
Oh.
So, yeah, they're getting big now.
Right.
They changed the logo,
Brazzers?
Too.
Are they involved with Brazzers?
Coming
and
up,
all?
Yeah, yeah.
Are they doing anything with... are they sponsoring any tug job videos?
We are walking a fine line, I realize.
I love Tap Out.
You do. You love it, right? You do love it. You ended up... Did you love it before? Is that what attracted you?
No, no. I thought
I heard
it was
they
the
paid $3
thing.
Million to
but
Steven
now
Spielberg.
You love it, right?
I do. I thought it was like this ugly, like... Ed Hardy ripoff shirt, and the brand name that they chose was basically Give Up. So to me, that was like funny. So that's why we thought it was funny. And then, like,
it's over.
Yeah. You do it again and again and again, and just trying to convince all these people that it's great as a joke. But then I'm like, some of them does look good.
Right. Like,
you know what's good about Tap Out? The color scheme.
I've done that where I've made fun of something so much.
Yeah.
That then you like it.
It becomes an in joke with my friends, and we just joke about it.
Yeah.
And then slowly, it just becomes this thing that it becomes a part of it. Nick, you have, through Teen Cut Combo and Brutal Nights, you poked fun at a lot of people. Now, did you end up liking any of those people?
Some of them, I guess. But it was all very general, you know? And most of the time, I just feel bad that I was, like, as mean as I was, or that, you know, I would use the...
You were mean.
I was mean sometimes, and
Marty is not mean on those Tap Out records.
You were mean. Well, you know, I don't know.
You were. When I used to watch you going, well, that takes balls. And I used to poke fun at, make fun of a lot of people, too.
Yeah, but it doesn't take balls to be mean, man.
And Marty's not mean on his Tap Out records. And,
no,
and
you're general. No.
Yeah. We're talking a lot about Tap Out because those are the themes of the records. But there's another album that you put out.
That's right.
Called Live at the Rotary Club or From the Rotary Club.
I forget myself.
Right.
What songs are on that one? Does that have all the stuff of My Wife Is My Life?
Yeah, that's the whole My Wife Is My Life.
Can we do something we've never done on the podcast?
Sure.
Can we listen to that song right now?
Okay. Wife Is My Life, or should we play like So Alone? So Alone seems to be the one that people like.
That's the one with the video.
Yeah, right? yeah.
Do you think that the Rotary Club songs almost resonated more than the Tap Out songs?
Oh, way bigger. Yeah. Way bigger. When I put that album out, like, a lot has kind of come up this year. Like, Sketch Fests have been really good to me.
Yeah.
Canadian Comedy Awards are this weekend. And
that's good going? Like, are you nominated?
I'm nominated for Best Short for Beep Beep and Best Variety Act.
That's
for
so my cool.
live show. Yeah.
So I won't be there, but that's so cool.
In your live show?
Not really, no. My live show is basically, it'll be a concept. So when I was doing Tap Out, I go out and just do like Tap Out songs until like first song, they're like, okay. And then second song, like, again. And then by the end, they're like, amazing. Yes. Yeah, more. So the new one, we kind of... I write with a co-writer, like this guy that produces with me, Adam Kemp. And when we were trying to figure out what to do with the next record, I want a similar thing where I could just go on stage and have an act and just do like one joke again and again. So we came up with the idea of like, my wife has left me, and I brought her on stage. I offered her a lot of money to sit on stage and just listen to me sing all these songs at her, basically. So I forget your question.
I forget as well. But I love the idea that you really kind of took to the nth level, which is taking a joke and repeating it and repeating
it. And just figuring out how to like make it go crazier and crazier and crazier.
And stay with it for the whole circle of the joke.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done that on stage quite a few times to my own amusement.
Yeah.
I'm the only one who's getting it, laughing at it, enjoying
right.
it.
Yeah.
Because it's not a setting for comedy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that you do approach your shows like that.
Yeah.
And your records like that.
This is very I talk very little in between songs usually.
Yeah. Well, now you've got a setup where you can sort of just it's a performance.
Yeah.
And you're also satisfying your the stuff that you did at House Party with in the last Sabbath, mostly with the Swipey show. Human Life is Worthless. Which is called Human Life is Worthless.
Yeah.
Which is right. Your monthly show.
And I think Tim Gilbert, who is the co-host of that, touched on that when he was here.
It's a fun show where, like, it's basically one joke where we run a stand-up comedy competition. He gives everyone 0 out of 10. I give everyone 10 out of 10. That joke is established very early that I'm too nice and he's too mean. But from there, we were able to... Every show will have, like, a concept and the through line where, like, weird characters will come in and kind of, like, a story arc of, like, I raped him and impregnated him and I pull a baby out of him by the end or something like that. We got married in our last show.
All this happens in between the actual comedians on the bill.
That's right. Yes, those poor comedians.
Which is what I think I said to Tim last time when he was here was the hosts of a comedy night are usually the most boring part of the show.
Yeah. I mean, we don't really do it that way at Last Sabbath, but I guess there's like a tradition to that where they're just there
to run the show.
You know? Yeah. And there is a point hosting most shows where
it's not a reflection of their
talent. No, I know what you're saying. And there is a point in most comedy shows where, and it's sometimes to the detriment of a Last Sabbath show, in that where you're like, oh my God, there's 5 people left and it's like 10:30 now.
Yeah.
We need to just move this along.
Yeah.
But
sometimes we'll do that. Like when we're writing a show, we'll have like, we'll put like 2 or 3 comics. We'll be like, we'll move. But yeah, we want to put a lot of like crazy, I think a lot of people come back to see the show month after month or week after week.
Yeah.
Because every one of us, like, it's a collection of 4 monthly shows to make it a weekly show. And every one of us, we put a lot of work into, like, Jackie Pirico and James. Yeah. And
now we have a theme for our show every week, though, Andrew Johnson and Sarah Hennessy and me. Yeah.
So, so people come back to see what kind of new stuff we're doing, I assume.
So you guys have flipped the whole idea. Where people,
it's more about
people
us.
Sit through the comedians to get to the host.
Whenever it's a themed show, I'm, like, very happy to do it, you know. There's an Australian edgy comedian I'm working on.
Yeah, have you been? You've been trying out your Australian accent on these podcast episodes for months.
Yeah,
is it more Aussie or New Zealand or?
It's probably I don't really know. I don't really know the difference between the two, but I like it a lot. I'm pretty sure I'm aiming. I think when I'm speaking a little more like this, and it's not quite as irritating, is. Other ways, that's probably New Zealand and Kiwi, but...
Yeah, you sound very Kiwi.
You can tell the difference?
When
you
I work with a lot of Australian
and New
Zealanders.
When you get more like this,
yeah.
And then it's a little more like this, and you're kind of leaning into it a little bit more, I think it's more Australian, and not even Australian, and more like a hobbit or something, like a fictional nation that I've created that's almost like maybe an old-timey New Yorker. Or somebody from New Hampshire.
So is this what you did, Nick? You go on stage now?
I go on stage as like that? Jeff Jimmeries, the edgiest comedian you've ever seen.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I've done it. How long
have you been doing that?
Just done it 2 or 3 times. And I
from beginning to end, you are...
Well, just as a 7-minute act, and I come out, I'm like, what the fuck's going on, everybody? I was jerking off right before I got on stage. I was jizzing in my mouth. I was jizzing everywhere. There's so much jizz in the green room. You should come in and lick it up.
Why don't you do an album of...
Just as Jeff Jimmeries?
Jeff Jimmeries.
I would love to do that.
Why don't you just do that?
Let's work on it.
And wait a minute.
Marty?
Fuck the audience.
No.
Just put a laugh track. Just put a audience.
That's what my last album was. It's a fake live album.
Live at the Rotary Club, right?
I would love to do a Jeff Jimmeries album where it's like, I don't know. I'm not really doing it justice now because I'm it's like.
Well, then you have endless amounts of takes.
Look at all these fuckers. Look at all these fuckers that gone to their fucking weddings. They're getting fucking married. What are they, fucking idiots?
You could get huge in Australia.
I went to a fucking wedding the other day. I was like, this lady is like, I do. And the fucking bloke's like, I do. And I'm like, I do. Jack off watching you two fucking idiots.
You should seriously do that.
I should do it. I really want to do a concept album.
I'm not finely tuned to what a New Zealander or an Australian accent is. So,
I'm sure I could not perform it in New Zealand or Australia.
It would be great if it was incorrect.
Or just make it ambiguous, like don't really say where you're from.
Well, I love my favorite thing with an accent, and really is sort of say the ever shifting accent, you know, which is most evidenced in Devil's Advocate, Keanu Reeves in the movie. Have you ever seen the movie Devil's Advocate?
Yeah, I mean, Devil's 15 years ago.
It's such a I haven't seen it in years either. But it's one of the all time. It's like movies like Devil's Advocate and The Doors are sort of. Both of those movies exist as these weird movies. You talk about having a hard time sort of going from hating to liking. Those are movies that are both so terrible in this massive scale.
But The Doors was a terrible
movie. But they're also so expertly done in a lot of ways. Like, I feel, when I think of the band The Doors, I picture, because of when I picture Kilmer, Jim Morrison. I'm just saying that the movie made me love them, but it's also because of when I grew up. I was like 12 or 13. But it's also like one of the worst movies. And The Devil's Advocate is one of those movies that's so high concept. These are both movies I saw as a teenager.
High concept?
Devil's Advocate?
Are we talking about the same movie, Al Pacino?
The movie, if it's a movie about a lawyer that is taken to, it
sells his soul, right?
Yeah, I guess it's a classic.
How high is
it? It's a classic concept, but it's like a high concept because you transfer it to New York.
They're in a skyscraper.
In Manhattan. And you're like, even saying, and guess who's going to be the devil? Al Pacino. You know, and like, and guess who's, you know.
What was that? What was the Lisa Bonet, Robert De Niro one?
That was Angel Heart. I've never seen that one. I've always wanted to see that movie.
And I thought he was a better devil.
I've got to see that movie because I love...
Al Pacino's just fucking Al Pacino.
No, he's great. I think he's great.
You want a contract?
No. He's got... He's like, we do everything here. You know? We do mortgage, you know, low, what's that, subterm mortgage, you know, like, and the casting is so good in it.
Charlize Theron is
That was a breakout movie for Charlize Theron, actually. Heather Matarazzo from Welcome to the Dollhouse is in it at the beginning. It's the last Jeffrey Jones kind of appearance before he was ruined. I'm just saying, and The Doors is the same thing. The casting is like... fucking crazy in it. What was my point? I feel like we got...
Really, I don't know. But
I have no idea. But
I
love
no idea when Marty came on and we were talking about The Devil's Advocate.
And The Doors movie and how good it is.
I alternatively love and hate those films.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm saying my favorite thing... And Keanu Reeves plays a Southern lawyer in that film.
And
he's like... Even in the one... There's this one scene...
He's from the South in the movie?
Yeah, he's in Florida. That's why Charlize Theron is also doing a Southern accent. She's like, I love you so much. Her mother is like a backwoods, shoeless, God-fearing woman in that movie, too. It's like, don't go to the New York. It's a den of sin, you know? And then, but Keanu Reeves, there's a scene where he just even goes through the accent in one scene. And the scene where he goes to the top of the elevator... to John Milton is the name of Al Pacino's character. And he's like,
there's your high
he goes up and he's like, oh, this place is very nice. And then the guy's
I
like,
can't remember if he had the
I'm gonna do the scene for you right now.
But I only saw it once.
Yeah, I saw it one time.
So this is where he lives. And then they're like, this is his living. Where's the bedroom? He doesn't have a bedroom. Well then, where does he sleep? He doesn't sleep. Well, where does he fuck? Everywhere! And then he says everywhere. That's how he walks in. But Keanu Reeves goes from like, I don't believe in the things you're saying. And to kind of be like, I'm from Canada, obviously. And he's just like, there's no consistent accent.
Nick,
you
don't have a photographic memory. How many times have you seen Devil's Advocate?
Probably.
Yeah, you must have seen it recently.
No, not that recently. 4 or 5 times, I think.
Okay.
I saw it in the theater alone, and I wrote a review of it for drama class when they made us write reviews of every type of art.
Wow, what a sidetrack.
Horrific sidetrack, just so I could do an impression.
Oh, you're Jim Jeffries.
You were talking about just doing weird stuff.
But yes, I want to make an album like that. I've always wanted to, and that's something you've always been so good at, is like just executing a single kind of concept thing. That's really what you dwell in mostly.
I don't know if I could do a different way. Like, I don't feel comfortable going on stage and being like, I'm a musical comedian. Here's a song about dogs. You know, here's a song about toilets.
Although don't you, that, you know, that, listen to that, Tom Lehrer?
I'm actually intrigued by that presentation.
Dogs. I am a wonderful comedian. Here is a song about dogs.
Yeah.
Here is a song about toilets. Here is a song about another word.
And we're I want people to just kind of just watch a man melt down on stage every time I go.
And that
on.
Is the album, really, Live at the Rodeo, where you actually die.
I die and go to heaven.
Live. Are you more confident with your musical abilities? Now is are you branching out musically now?
A little bit. Like I still don't know how to play the guitar, but I'm better at synth live playing a bit, because normally we record everything at home, me and my roommate Adam. So with the new record, we kind of push ourselves. I still don't know theory, but like I can figure out chords just by kind of, you know, what trial and error. Yeah, like this works, like change that note and that works and that kind of thing. So. Yeah, I feel like the new stuff, it's always kind of getting better for us, and we always want to challenge ourselves by taking a genre that we don't know how to write in. I keep tapping your table.
You don't have to. Yeah, no one can hear it.
Like, taking a genre that we've never done and being like, how do we write that, or how do we produce it? We did that in the last record. There's like a kind of D'Angelo-style song. There's like a New Jack Swing song.
Right.
And we kind of dug in, and we're like, what were the drum machines they used? Like a Lindrum? Okay, let's figure that out. What kind of synths did they use? Let's see if we can work that.
Are you basically trying to become a Miami Sound Machine?
That's such another genre to
take. Well, one of the Tap Out songs had, like, vaguely some sort of a New Jack Swing style that I couldn't really...
Yeah.
What if you become so good at making the music that you get serious enough that you want to bury these albums?
No. Yeah,
what if you become an instrumental artist?
Well, no, our ultimate goal really is to write as catchy... poppy music as we can with just like insane lyrics on top of
which is like Ween, you know, a band like Ween, which, you know, it had such an inherent advantage.
Dean
to
Ween
it.
Was an incredible or is an incredible guitarist.
I think they're actually both quite good musicians.
Yeah, but as a guitar player,
and
Dean Ween
and Dean Ween's a great guitarist.
Yeah.
But you know, they're both great at instruments, and they also, and this is similar to you and Adam, is, you know, they sort of knew each other from, I don't know how long you've known Adam, I'm assuming a very long time.
High school, yeah.
Yeah, these guys went to high school together, lived together over many steps, and then the best part about that, and that maybe you're going through this with Adam too, is like, you're so aware of, you're listening to music together, and you're laughing about, like, I heard that Lou Reed song, New York Phone Conversation the other day, and I was like, there's so many Ween songs that are like making fun of this song, and I had forgotten
that,
you know, and just sort of aiming for that. But it seems like, although you are hitting that type of music, and you are parroting stuff, it's kind of, it's like affected by how rap is or something, and how it's almost like you're going over a type of music rather than a band like Ween, which is like inherently within that song, if that makes any sense.
Well, like the music itself, we're not trying to make silly. We're trying to make as like catchy and kind of like emotional as possible. Because I find it's so much funnier to just put like insane, funny things over like a song that can kind of make you feel something.
By the way, the song I was thinking of the other day was, or just now when I was like, was that the song? Was I'm So Alone, loving it.
Yeah,
that's the hit.
Yeah, that is a great song. Yeah.
Video single.
Yeah.
You should see that song live. It's, Danko, it's like, it's so...
It's crazy.
Crazy how into it the audience gets.
By the third chorus, it's always... Yeah. It's like an inside joke to me, because always by the third chorus, often by the second, the whole crowd will be singing along the chorus with me. Like, with all this, and it's about being alone. Right. We're all sitting together, and by the end, like, I just kind of walk through the crowd and just hand the mic off to people, and we're all just like screaming about like being alone.
Really, it gets to that level.
It's crazy,
and cool
almost
thing,
every show I do with that one. Yeah,
with your style, also, it's something where, for once, you know, I think with comedians, there's such an element of fighting to be in the moment, working with material you've had for a long time, getting sick of it, not wanting to repeat yourself. I think when you're doing a musical presentation, it's like, it's a different kind. It's, even when it's funny, you're sort of triggering like slightly different what's the word?
Reactions?
I'm thinking what's in endorphins or whatever almost in people. So you're, I don't know.
It's true. No, like in comedy, if you see someone tell the same joke twice, the first time it blows your mind, the second time you're kind of bored. But it's no fault of the comic. Like, that takes hard, like, a lot of time and effort to write. Mm-hmm. But with music, there is something where you can hear the beginning of a song, and if it's a song you like, instead of being bored, you're like, oh, yeah, this one. Mm-hmm. So I've been lucky that I've been able to repeat material. That was a big thing that we worried about when I was switching to doing musical comedy, because I wanted to keep doing new stuff. But it's hard to, like, write new sets when you're doing sets
all
the time.
You're way better off sticking with, like, the way people do some podcasts now, which is like seasonally and sort of viewing it like a season or, you know.
Like, we do want to try to, like, if we can pump out a new record every year, that'll let me go back to, like, all the, do the festivals and and give me a new act to have that, for that year.
What a band does.
Yeah.
And now, but even if it's a year and a half.
Yeah.
You were saying you were worried about it when you first started doing music, but now that you've played these songs over and over again, do you find that you enjoy the repetition of, like, the playing of these songs over and over again as much as the audience likes hearing it again?
Yeah, it depends who the audience is. Like, if it's an audience that's heard it before, I get sick of it pretty quickly, just because it's the comedian thing where it's, like, embarrassing to put your jokes in front of these people again. Mm-hmm.
But it is a song. It is a song. At the end of the day as well.
So, yeah, if it's a new crowd, I always find I have, like, more energy and more passion for it than if I'm doing it just like, if I'm doing a set at Last Sabbath, and I usually try to write new songs to do sets on other people's shows at Last Sabbath, because I know it's the same kind of crowd.
Not necessarily recording them.
I record like demos just to memorize it, and we usually like save them to see if they'll fit on the album or something.
So you do have like B-sides.
Oh yeah, yeah. We were going to put an album out before this album of like a mixtape of like 20 songs that I write that are show specific that don't make sense anywhere else.
Right.
So if I did them live, it would be like that thing where like dog, toilet, whatever. But I don't know what to do with them. So we're just sitting on them. I'm really happy with a few of them.
You know, you see it with Lonely Island.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. They make albums where, you know, they'll have running jokes and, you know, and some of the songs don't really stand because of that. They don't really stand to like only audio separate from the other.
Yeah.
You know, and then, but once you get, you know, like a bot or even I'm on a Boat, which references the whole Santana joke that was going through that album, it works so well. And like so many of those songs work so amazingly with the videos, you know. Lonely Island is kind of like, that's like pretty much the top of the mountain that kind of music, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing with videos.
Because they're nailing styles.
Yeah.
You know?
They're what?
They're nailing the style of songs.
Yeah, I find
They don't produce a lot of it. They'll buy like from big time producers.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
So they can do it.
It's mainly just like, he loves hip hop.
Yeah.
Right?
It's mostly hip hop. Yeah. But there's also a slight version of, it's always basically rappy, but there will be songs like, you know, Jizz in My Pants kind of has more of a, like, not a new wave, like a Depeche Mode kind of thing or something going on. And
and you say they buy those tracks?
Well, some of them they make on their own, but they work with, like, big producers,
And they nail it in the rapping, you know, because
that's one thing I can't.
Well,
he loves that.
He loves naturally, like, as a fan of
I'm
that
on
music.
So I'm on a boat. Well, you'll hear these things where you go, oh, that's like an exact Young Jeezy flow that he kind of is perfectly kind of making fun of slash just doing, you know?
Yeah.
And that to me is like the excitement listening to Lonely Island.
Know,
besides that, it's, and that it's funny
it's,
to me.
But also, not so like, I think Lonely Island are great, but the whole like, using rap music to be funny,
it's over now.
It's kind of played out.
Yeah.
That's why I found when I heard your records refreshing that you didn't go.
That's
into
one
that
thing.
Direction.
Like,
it's so tempting to do it.
It's really
easy.
Yeah,
and
but
it's
like,
really tempting for white guys who are funny.
Yeah,
and
that's
and
the thing that I really don't want to do. It's just like white guy comedy rap is something that's been done like to death, and I don't think I'd be good at it.
And there's
for
also
one.
A thing with like show like comedy specifically that's so messed up, and you find out it when you're sort of in the ranks of like a bunch of other people. And you see it a lot in the U.S. almost more. These people are good at everything. They're like, so you're like a guy who's like, oh, I'm also a punk rock singer. And then all of your friends who are doing comedy can also like sing songs and, you know what I mean? And like play great guitar and act and then do stuff. It's like, it's a weird world where people do a lot of different talents and it's fucking annoying.
You're a punk rock singer.
Yeah, I am, but that's nothing compared to people who can like sing, like James Hartnett, you know, can like sing
a
song super well.
He's on the new album. Or not the new one, but the Rotary Club album.
Oh, I think he's the guest
number one dad, yeah.
Right, he's your dad.
Yeah,
or your stepdad.
Mom's boyfriend,
and in the U.S., like, the amount of comedians doing, like, white comics who can just rap out of nowhere is so silly.
But it's so boring.
But that's the thing about it, yeah. It's a little bit played out. Like, it kind of makes me cringe in the way that, like, saying I'm a musical comedian cringe. That when you watch it, it is entertaining and it's good. Like, there's a show in Toronto called Rap Battles, which is one of the funnest shows I've been fortunate
but
to do.
But that one is so based on King of the Dot, specifically. Yeah. So it's more like that thing where there's no backing music, and you're just sort of rhyming words. So it takes out the awkwardness of those to me, which is like, you're always watching them and you're always watching some guy, like, have too much fun rapping in front of you.
You know, one thing must be made clear is you're not, you know, even though you're incorporating music with your comedy, it's not done in the kind of that Adam Sandler kind of way. Or I've seen so many people get up with an
acoustic guitars. I don't know how to play guitar. Yeah,
and they have a punchline, you know, they rhyme all the words to make it seem funny, and then there's a punchline, and it's
Adam Sandler's got some jams, though. You ever hear Amazing Willy Wanker? That's a good song.
We're not talking bad about it, but we're just... I think we're trying to say,
he
like...
did it 20 years ago.
It's been done much.
For sure.
So we're trying to find, like, a new avenue.
Well, he's the blueprint for a lot of
Stephen
comedians.
Lynch is sort of, like, in that
one. Yeah.
But I don't get Bo Burnham's vibe when I listen to your records. I think it's a different kind of music album. All right, music comedy, I mean.
Yeah.
So
I've never been able to properly explain what I do.
But you like musical comedy, right?
I do. Like, I'm a big Weird Al fan, that kind of thing. But I don't listen to like a lot of like acoustic comedy rock.
I think it's more complicated than that. You know, I think that's the thing we think of is like acoustic comedy. But then it's like people like Bo Burnham, for instance, to me, sits in this kind of nice extension of that guy Tom Lehrer, who was like the 60s dude who would play piano songs and do very deadpan jokes in between. And it was such
people
a great combination. He's a math. That guy's a like Tom Lehrer, when he wasn't touring with that, was like a Stanford math professor. So he was a very disciplined, brilliant person, you know. And
I've always been surprised that in all the years that Weird Al has been around, there hasn't been anybody who has been influenced by Weird Al the way people are influenced by Led Zeppelin to do their version of a Weird Al.
Maybe there can be only one.
Like Psycho Pete or Strange Dave.
I think that the people who are doing that are...
Like, concept is so easy.
The people who are doing that... We're getting so impassioned. I'm really into this. You could argue that the main world of that is like morning radio, where like Howard Stern is getting Eli Braden is sending tons of those types of parodies.
That's true.
But they're all specific. They're always like
about packaged in a morning zoo format. So you're only going to expect it there. But some guy,
like, you remember What I Like About Jews? What I Like About Jews.
Is that a Stern?
That was a Stern parody song from years
ago. It's great.
It's a Sulu
But the
dance.
Thing is, like...
Like, I'm leading up to the fact that I had, years ago, an idea to do Strange Paul.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Strange Paul.
I wanted to be Strange Paul.
Yeah.
And do it, like, you know, away from our band.
Yeah.
Just do it underground. But there was no internet. Well, there was an internet, but there was no band camp.
Put a band together?
No, I never did, but I've always, like, I have it written down somewhere in my notes.
So you just
take Strange Paul, and then I had the list of songs that I was going to parody.
Are you parodying songs he's also parodied?
Well, that's actually hilarious.
The thing is, like, everyone's written a parody song in their life.
Yes.
But no one has been able to do it like Weird Al has done it. Like, I would never want to touch a parody song because, like, it's such his thing. Even, yeah. like, doing songs about food, I'm a little bit iffy about.
Yeah,
because
it's just,
and he's so good at it. He's worked with that same band since the 80s, and they recreate all the sounds in their own studio, which is mind-blowing.
That's his secret weapon.
Oh, yeah. I saw them live on their last tour in Las Vegas, and they were just so tight. It's like all these, like, they're old men now, his band, and they're just so incredibly in tune with each other, and they would bring out special guitars and synthesizers to do, like, that Devo song.
Yeah.
Like, they were just amazing.
How about this? Strange Paul does TV theme songs. Like, Cheers.
That,
you know, everybody knows your name.
Right. So he'd be like,
come and knock on my door.
Glowing Brains.
But the thing is, though,
could be like the Growing Pains theme.
It's your radiation friend,
poisoning or something.
Plesiosaur or JP Inc.
JP Inc. and Plesiosaur both.
Well, JP Inc. did a full album of like fake TV themes. They weren't parodies, but he did a full album, and it was amazing.
Yeah, JP Inc. is definitely someone who you're in the same that, like wheelhouse.
Seeing JP
as,
Inc. kind of helped push me to do what I do.
Yeah,
I
he's saw really
him,
great.
Yeah, I saw. You should check out JP Incorporated. I saw him live.
He was opening
for
Devo. Yeah.
Yeah, he was opening for Devo, and I first saw him opening for Neil Hamburger.
Right.
And it was kind of similar to what I do, musical comedy, but one concept, like one through line the whole way through until it's just like insane. I was like, you can do this.
And he has a huge audio visual element too. He makes videos accompanying each of his
songs. For every song,
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo put out a Christmas album too.
That was like a jokey kind of album?
Yeah.
I never heard that, but I could
believe
it.
I've never heard it either. I would like to hear it.
I think I have it somewhere.
No way. I mean, Devo is such an interesting case. You know, Devo is like not Ween at all, but there is a humor that is so black, though.
Yeah.
You know, it's really more of a concept that's kind of smart and arty, I would say.
It's
like
funny craft work, right?
Yeah. And but
not
transcends
like, not jokey.
Humor
no.
a lot.
Yeah.
Like, even a song like Freedom of Choice that's, like, funny is kind of, like, smarter than it is funny, I would say, you know?
Yeah.
It's like craft work meets The Residents.
Yeah, I mean, it has, like, such a dystopian... It feels like social criticism, as you know, like, maybe it's satire more than anything else, you know? And, but really deep satire like, Devo is such a great bass line. That was certainly a band that, like, when I had my bands and I was always writing funny lyrics and all of it. Like, that was always my intent, actually, with bands as well. It was, like, make it funny, don't have
anyone...
But do good music. Yeah, like, it's more important... The band, but it would always be a weird thing where, like, one or two people in the band would think it was really funny.
Yeah.
Everyone would think it was really funny, but there would be people in the band who'd be like, they were always as interested in making good music as they were in, like, oh, ha-ha, Nick, let's...
Yeah.
They never made it the focus.
I'm always writing songs for just random shows and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we're always trying to write music. Like, we did that... Or you weren't there. We did a James Hartnett's theme song.
Oh, cool. Last night?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And we're really happy with that song. But yeah, I think as far as albums go, I do want to keep it, like, build this character of Marty Tops and see how much more we can go with it and that kind of thing.
Well, I look forward to more records from you, Marty.
Thank you, Denka.
I'm a big fan.
Thanks.
And everybody can get it at martytops.bandcamp.com, right?
That's right. For free.
For totally free.
But don't. Do it for free. Give them a few.
Yeah, it's worth money, man.
Yeah. They're really good. They're really hilarious, and everybody's got to check them out.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. Thanks for coming.
My pleasure.
Great.
Us to join together and to be the best that we can truly be. If it's cold, put on a hooded tapered sweater, and if it's hot, put on your favorite tapered tee. Now everybody, tap out! Everybody, tap out! Put on your favorite tap out! Go and buy some more tap out! Friends, moms, it's true. Aunties, uncles, cousins too. Doctors, soldiers, pizza guys. You'd all look so much better if you gave tap out a try. Now try it. Tap out. Gotti, what a gun, extra smile. Harriet Tubman would have brought hers underground.